Because I think it's an area that sometimes you can sit there and you've got that blank page in front of you, go, right, I've got my project. What are my risks?
Well, you should be doing it on your own, really. You should be having your team involved, getting multiple perspectives. That's where the process and the tools and techniques help to get you started. So you do a SWOT analysis that says, okay, we're good at this, we're bad at that. So what? What are the opportunities that come out of our strengths? What are the threats that come out of our weaknesses? And the technique begins to open things up for you. Or you do a root cause analysis, or you use a risk breakdown structure. And all these things are prompts or frameworks to help you think beyond the blank page.
Hi, and welcome to the Sunday Lunch Project Manager podcast for Sunday, the 14th of April, 2024. This is your host, Nigel Creaser. And today we've got the second part of my interview with Dr. David Hilson, the risk doctor. Enjoy. So I have a number of sponsors, affiliate links, in the way that it's set up, that have kindly allowed me to share their services, really. The first one is Mike Kling, and Mike runs PM online PM courses, and it is a great resource for getting those fundamentals of project management trained, reasonably priced, and Mike presents it in an accessible and clear manner. You can check out some of his videos on his YouTube channel and kind of give you a view of where they are. But the code for that, if you go to nigelcreaser.com/online-pm-courses, all one word, lowercase, that'll redirect you to it. There's various different levels that you can buy. You can buy individual courses, you can buy pathways as well, if you like, and I get a kickback off those. Mike kindly shares me that. So if you do jump on and use it, I hope you find it really useful. I think he has money back guarantees and things like that as well, so there's a very limited risk on that. So jump on that, and that again is nigelcreaser.com/online-pm-courses, and enjoy.
Do you find that in organisations that you've been involved with, where that application of a risk process, well, people will naturally be doing that risk management process you just described there as part of their project delivery, and then you place a process or a set of documentation or a set of forms or whatever, or a computer system, or whatever around it, people then go, right, because I've filled that in, I've done my risk management. Do you see that happening?
Yes, there is a tendency to believe that once you've fed the system, you've done your job.
Yeah,
and of course, what we have to recognise is that risk isn't managed by computers or systems or processes. Risk is managed by people.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, if you buy a copy of Microsoft Word, it doesn't make you an author. You could write a world, you know, award-winning novel with Microsoft Word, but just because you've got it doesn't make you an author. And just because you've got some risk tool or some risk process, it doesn't mean you're managing risk. So what we're doing is using the process and the toolkit to facilitate the thinking process of answering those six questions. And facilitation, you know, the Latin word facile or Italian word facile means easy. And so facilitation means making something easier than it would be without. So a facilitator makes the process, makes the meeting easy.
Yeah.
A risk toolkit or a risk process facilitates the identification and management of risk. It makes it easier, but we still have to do it. And so just because you've got something in a risk register doesn't mean it's managed. You've got to do something about it.
And how do you get, is that, do you think that's inexperience of the project managers? Is it inexperience of the organization, the focus of organizations that you find that happens, or is it a combination?
I think we're all too busy and we do things that are urgent instead of things that are important. And so, you know, we've got to find a way of delegating or prioritizing so that the things that are urgent get done as well, but we don't miss out on the important things. And that again is where process can help. If you can't get through the next gateway without having done a proper risk assessment and presenting a reasoned explanation of how you're going to manage the risks in the next phase, then you don't get through the gateway.
Yeah, and the process becomes important then. Yeah.
And of course, you should be doing that anyway. So I think process is a useful backstop. It's like my marriage contract. I don't know if I've ever read my marriage contract, but it's there if I need it. Mm. And you have to hope that you won't need it. You know, if after 40 years, we haven't ever referred to the vows that we made and said, well, you said, because, you know, we didn't need to. Some people do, of course. And then, you know, that's when they're in trouble. So the same, I think, is true, of the process. It's there to remind us that we need to do things that we should want to do intuitively anyway.
Cool. That makes sense. Because I think it's an area that sometimes you can sit there and you've got that blank page in front of you. Go, right, I've got my project. What are my risks?
Well, you should do that on your own, really. You should be having your team involved.
Yeah.
In multiple perspectives. Yeah. That's where the process and the tools and techniques help to get you started. So you do a SWOT analysis that says, okay, we're good at this, we're bad at that. So what? What are the opportunities that come out of our strengths? What are the threats that come out of our weaknesses? And the technique begins to open things up for you. Or you do a root cause analysis, or you use a risk breakdown structure. And all these things are prompts or frameworks to help you think beyond the blank page.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense. So moving from where you were, you've gone through your other, and obviously you went into that career as within Ferranti, you moved on. And from what you said, is that when you set up risk consultancies and you were working with other risk consultancies?
Yeah, I started, I was poached by the risk consultancy that was advising me at Ferranti. So they said, you know, you're good at this, why don't you come and join us on the other side of the fence? And so I joined them for 5 years, became director of risk consulting. And then another company that I saw had a wider a scope of interest than just defence projects and the defence industry. And they were working in pharmaceuticals and construction and IT and so on. And so I moved to them to broaden my experience outside of defence. I had 5 years with each. And that was really, really useful. Just applying the basic principles that I'd learned in Ferranti in completely different settings. And then when I got to 2003, then I formed the Risk Doctor Partnership, which has been going ever since.
Yeah, because that's when I first heard of you, I think, when I was working with PMI. I think you were presenting at different places then and potentially advertising with the PMI UK chapter as well.
Yes, one of the things I've done is spoken a lot at conferences just to get my ideas out and get them tested and get some feedback. And I've spoken at every PMI conference in the US and in Europe since 1999. So 1999 was Philadelphia. And then I just went US, Europe, US, Europe until just about 3 years ago. So I speak at all those events.
Yeah, I thought that was definitely where I remember you. So you've got the Risk Doctor, you're out there, and what the Risk Doctor Partnership, is that your own Risk Doctor consulting organisation, or is it more focused on, so it's similar sort of thing?
So I am the Risk Doctor. There is only one Risk Doctor, and that's me. But I have 24 people around the world who are equal sort of peers of mine in risk management and that sort of level of expertise and experience, all of whom, I don't employ anybody, they're all associates, but they all have a successful track record of, you know, helping people manage risk in quite complex and difficult settings. So I've got 7 in Australia, a couple in China, 5 in South Africa, people in the States and Canada, and then throughout Europe. So 1 in India. It's a small select group and you can't join, you know, it has to be people that I know. I get lots of people saying, well, how do I become a partner? And I said, the answer is, I'm sorry, you don't. But when I say there's only one Risk Doctor, of course, that's not actually true. There are two others in the world. I don't suppose I should probably mention them on air because that might be weakening, diluting my brand.
Yes.
But there's a Risk Doctor in Chicago called Charlie Cottle, who is an options trader. And all he does is options trading, and he's very, very good at it, but he's not what I do. And we know about each other and we like each other and we, you know, we talk to each other, but we don't compete. And then there's another risk doctor in Australia. His name's Cyril Jankoff, and he's a contracts and procurement specialist. And all he does is contract risk in project contracts. So again, you know, we know about each other. We've talked about how we interact and agreed that we don't actually compete. So there are these other two, but they're both very specialized. And so my risk doctor partnership, risk doctor offering is much broader and international, of course.
Yeah. There's always someone who likes the name. A good
name. It's a great name, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's a really good one.
It came about, I know you're going to ask me this, and if you aren't,
you should,
where did it come from? I have a friend called Janice Preston in California who used to call me Dr. Doom. Yeah, exactly. I wasn't very flattered, actually. So this was before the risk doctor came along. And so, you know, I went with it. You know, it was a bit of fun. But then when I decided I wanted to start my own company, and I started the company 6 months or actually 9 months before I started. So I had a shadow company, a shadow website, a shadow blogs and so on. So that when we went live, there was a history there already.
Yeah.
And I was on holiday with my family in Sardinia, in Villa Simius, quite close to Cagliari. We were sitting around the pool, and I was talking to my wife and my two daughters about starting a new company. It was going to be risky. I didn't know where the money was coming from. Did they think it was a good idea and so on? And we got to talking about names for the company. I didn't want David Hilson Associates or anything like that, which is a bit limiting. So I said, well, you know, Janice calls me Dr. Doom. But I don't like that. So I thought maybe Dr. Risk. And my older daughter just immediately said, well, not Dr. Risk, Risk Doctor. And it just went click.
Yeah.
And all the lights went on, you know, the sun shone and the birds went, ah. And there I knew exactly then it was the right name. So the Risk Doctor name was born by the side of a swimming pool in Sardinia.
Yeah, that sounds like the perfect place for it to start.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Yeah, hopefully a wine or a bottle in hand as well.
Something like that, yes.
So you started up the Risk Doctor. You obviously, you've just reading those awards has been you're very successful and a lot of demand on your time doing that. So if I kind of look back over that career and look at what you've done, what would you say is your biggest screw up?
The biggest screw up.
And more importantly, what did you learn from it?
Yes, I've worked in 55 different countries on every continent except the Antarctic, which is way too cold.
It's a bit risky up there, is it?
Very, yeah. I love culture. And different cultures and different languages and food and music and all those things. And my first big client in the Middle East was the Lebanese company. I won't give you a lot of detail because I don't want to say who they were. Mm-hmm. But they're very big in a whole range of different countries throughout the Middle East. And we got to do, myself and some colleagues, really design their entire risk management process from scratch, starting with the board, and going through to their project teams. So we trained about 1,000 people. We spent, you know, worked with them for about 5 years. And we got to a point where myself and a colleague were working on a big project of theirs, and we gave them an indicative quote for some work. And it was just because we didn't know how the work was going to turn out. So when it came to it, the work was a lot more than we thought it was going to be. So we went back and just said, I'm very sorry, but the price is going to be 20% higher. And they objected. They said, no, well, you've promised and we've shaken hands and we've been out for dinner and, you know, we know you and you're our friends and you can't change the price. And I made the wrong choice to say, I'm sorry, you know, we've done the work. We're going to have to charge you this. I put the invoice in and never worked with them again. And it was just a question of completely misunderstanding the culture. You know, that in the Middle East, business is based on relationship, and relationship is based on trust. And if you say something and you don't keep your promise, then you're not trustworthy and you can't be worked with. And, you know, I mean, I was right, because we did do a lot more work and we could have and should have charged for it. But in the bigger context, you know, it was a stupid thing to do because we lost a very lucrative client. And so that was probably my biggest screw up, not understanding or respecting the cultural drivers. And I learned a huge amount from that. You know, it's not all about the money. It is all about the relationship. And different cultures have different ways of building relationship.
Yeah, it's all, like you said before, it's about the relationships, isn't it, in general, getting things done. If you've gone back to your contract, and fundamentally same sort of thing, if you've had to go back to your contract, something's gone wrong, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And they paid, you know, but then they just never spoke to us again. And I knew, I kicked myself, you know, within a day of doing it, and I could just see the whole attitude changed instantly. And there was no second chances. I did apologize, of course. And I did go to a couple of meetings with senior managers since then, but after that. But, you know, there was just no openness anymore. And I just ruined it. Such a shame.
Mm. Well, let's flip away from that. I don't want you dwelling on that, especially with the name of Dr. Doom as well. So dwell down too far onto that one. But thinking about all of your risk management, obviously you will have been training people, you will have been educating CEOs, CIOs, all these different people, and helping them with their businesses. What is your proudest moment, whether that be the proudest, I know, risk you've identified and solved a risk that and avoided a risk, that it was so important, or whether it was more about the people side of it, whatever. What would you say is your proudest thing that made you feel full of pride?
Can I give you two?
Yeah.
One is a small one and the other's a big one. I was going to a meeting up in London, must be 10 or 11 years ago, rush hour, arrived at Euston tube station, and there's loads of people on the platform and I was on the tube. The doors opened and I stepped out on the platform, and people kind of step back a little bit when you come out. From the back of the crowd, a voice said, "Good God, it's David Hilson." And I've no idea who it was. I didn't see it. They didn't approach me afterwards. I went to the meeting. I looked at it. No, there was nothing. I have no idea. But on a crowded London underground platform, somebody recognized me. And I'm quite short. I'm only 5'6", you know, so I wasn't like towering above everybody else. And I wasn't the first off the train. I was quite proud of that. I dined out on that for quite a long time.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Maybe if in the unlikely event of my small listenership, that is that person who did shout that at David.
Yes, then.
Let me get in touch.
I'll take you out to dinner.
You'll have a whole host of people claiming to be there.
That's right, yeah. And then more significantly, to understand the significance of the beginning of this story, you have to know that I have an American brother-in-law who's a bit of a trickster. So I was in Boots in Petersfield and my mobile phone rang, and this American voice said, "Can I speak to the risk doctor?" And I said, "Who's calling?" He said, "This is the deputy director of NASA." And I thought of my brother-in-law and I went, "Yeah, right." and this voice said, "This is the deputy director of NASA. Who am I speaking to?" And I said, "You want the risk doctor? Just a minute, I'll go and get him." Came back with a slightly different voice. "Hello, how can I help you?" And sure enough, it was the deputy director of NASA. And he said, "We've got this problem with the mission to Mars. And when you're next in Washington, would you come and visit us?" Well, as it happened, my sister and brother-in-law live just south of Washington, D.C., so I was going to see them the next weekend. And I said, "Well, I'll be in Washington next weekend. You know, can we fix something up?" So I went over and went down to the Langley NASA base, which is in Virginia. And they've got this issue with trying to build a base station on the moon as a kind of interim jump off point for going to Mars. This is a project that was ultimately cancelled by Barack Obama. But at this stage, it was very live. And so we had the full day workshop to try and solve this problem of how to build a base station on the moon. And obviously I'm a world expert in base stations on the moon, as you can tell.
You've seen Space 1999, haven't you?
That's it. Yes, Joe 90, all of those things, definitely. So anyway, I applied my basic techniques and sort of approach to asking dumb questions and clever questions in alternating. And we had we start about 8 o'clock. We had a break at 11. And I said to the guy who called me in, you know, how's this going? He said, you've earned your money already. He said, this is totally brilliant. We're really close to a solution. And by 1 o'clock, we'd solved the problem. We've worked out how they were going to build a base station on the moon using techniques that I developed with GlaxoSmithKline in their vaccine research and development department to develop new vaccines. And I'd just taken this technique that I developed with them, applied it here in this aerospace, in this NASA setting, and it worked. And by 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, you know, I was done. I'd done a day's work. I got $5,000 or something. NASA was happy. And I went away and they carried on and did the job. And I was really proud of that. They invited me in the first place. B, that I was able to be useful within 3 hours of arriving, and C, that it actually solved the problem.
That's fantastic. Mm. And obviously it hooks back to your maybe not being an astronaut, but very close to touching.
Oh, well, yes, that's the nearest I got, sadly.
That's a lot closer than a lot of us, isn't it?
I've done Space Mountain in Disney World a couple of times.
Okay, fair enough. Similar, isn't it?
Yes.
That's brilliant. So, obviously, as I said before, I know of you from the speaking, from your writing and the blogging, and when you launched the Risk Doctor. What made you decide that you were going to do, because obviously I work as a consulting organization, you'd have obviously got within the industries, had quite a bit of knowledge on how to market yourself anyway, but what made you go into the writing, or had that started before that? What made you blog, podcast, speaking, etc.? What was the driver behind those?
I've always felt that, you know, I mean, I have ideas, I'm curious, and I think about things that other people perhaps haven't thought about, and ask the second and the third question, you know, don't just be satisfied with the first answer. And so I tend to kind of have ideas that turn out to be useful. I've got a few ideas that aren't very useful, but that's how you get useful ones, is by thinking of lots of other things along the way and sifting out the good ones. And I realized that I had more ideas than I could practically use myself. And so I developed a kind of pipeline approach to my good ideas. The first was to talk about them in conference presentations, to get people interested and aware that this idea was out there and was interesting and useful. And then when they came to ask me, I was the only person who knew how to do it. So that was quite a good sort of little boost to the business. And then after 2 or 3 years of exploiting that little bit of a lead on a new idea, and other people were beginning to hear about it and start to use it, and then I would train on it. And so I would then say, well, look, I know how to do it. You're interested. You'd like to do it. Let me show you. And then the third sort of leg of that was really to create a sort of legacy element, which would be either in writing or in videos, where I'd create something more permanent rather than just training the people who came on the courses, to say, well, look, if you want to know, here is a book or a couple of articles, or, you know, something somewhere that you can go and refer to, a video perhaps, which just gives you the detail that you need. So, and by the time, and with those three steps of being leading edge, of training others to come up behind, and then of making it available to everybody, I tried to keep a pipeline so that by the time I was writing the book on the first thing, I was leading edge on the next thing. And then by the time I was telling somebody else about how to do that thing, I was then ahead on the next thing. So I was trying to kind of keep that thought leadership, thinking and practice. And writing was really, and videos, a part of that whole sort of capturing the good ideas and making them available for other people. So apart from the books, everything I've done has been free. There's 120 Risk Doctor briefings available in 7 different languages, just free on the website. There's 171 videos on the Risk Doctor Video YouTube channel, all free. You know, everything is there just to take away and use, because I've got more ideas than I can use myself. So I'm happy to give it away.
That's brilliant. So Last few questions now, because I recognize we're knocking on towards the hour. What was the last risk book, project book, any book really that sort of like to do with your career that you read?
Well, of course, I'm writing books. So I've just finished the manuscript for my next book, which...
You're not allowed to say your own.
Well, I did read it. it's very good. Yeah, when you write something and then 3 months later it comes back through the typesetting process and you sit down and you think, oh, this is good. Who wrote this?
Yeah, because you've forgotten what you've written. And then
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's it. But absolutely, no problem. There's plenty of time to plug at the end.
No. I don't need to do that. Why Do Buses Come in Threes? That's a great little book, which I come back to from time to time, which is a kind of an idiot's guide to statistics. I mean, Why Do Buses Come in Threes is an explanation of queuing theory. Why is Fridays the best time to buy a lottery ticket? When it's raining, where should you hold your umbrella to stay driest, and how fast should you walk? So some really interesting chapters on basic statistics, and I find it a lovely, joyous little book which I love to read. Then perhaps a little more seriously, the Floor of Averages. Who's that by? Savage, I think his name is. The Floor of Averages again is a kind of a making. What I love is the idea of making complex concepts simple. And so some of those books I find just do that for me. And then I read a book called The Mists of Avalon during March, which is a fantasy book about King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, seen from the perspective of the women in the story. So Morgaine and Guinevere and Elaine and some of those others, just really, really interesting, and trying to get a view of the clash of cultures in ancient Britain between the Romans, the Christians, the Druids and the Celts. And so I read that really just as a bit of light entertainment, but for to get me thinking about different cultural perspectives.
They sound very interesting, all of those. That ancient Britain stuff, I've been reading a few things on that myself.
I love it.
What was the last podcast you listened to?
That was yours. So,
great choice. You've got such good taste.
I listened to your conversation with my friend Carl Pritchard, which I think came out
at the end. It was Carl who actually said to me, you should get David on.
I heard him say that. Yes, I was very impressed. I gave him $50 for that. So, Carl's very humble and very enthusiastic, and I love his work. And to just call himself the risk guy, I mean, he is American, of course, but, you know, the contrast between the risk guy and the risk doctor, you know, it's we do the same kind of thing, but in different settings. And I just love the way he presents himself and the way he writes and so on. So I listened to your podcast. I think it was 45 minutes. It's just a joy to listen to Carl expressing himself.
Yeah. He was expressive is the right way to describe him. It's fantastic. And what was the last blog you read?
I don't read blogs. I find that apart from my own, of course, but they are very, what's the word? Temporary. They're passing, you know, there's very little in a blog where I think, oh, I want to just print that out and read it again or save it on my computer and refer to it later. A lot of the blogs I read, I go, yeah, okay. So I'm not a great blog consumer, I'm afraid.
That's fair enough. So the final question I'm going to ask you is, and I'm trying to decide on what timeline to pick on here, but if you were able to talk to that younger self, David Hilson, actually probably when you were at Ferranti and you were doing the education stuff, and someone come to you and gone, right, let's do this risk stuff. What advice would you have given to yourself then, if you could talk to you now?
You know,
what would you say?
I don't think I'd say anything, because I think authenticity and integrity is important, and not to try and bias your reaction. I mean, I said earlier on somewhere about wanting to be fully enthusiastic and committed to the thing that's in front of me. And I've always tried to do that. And so when I go to bed at night, I'm totally exhausted because I've given everything during the day. And when I die, I don't want to have anything left to give. You know, I want to just stagger over the finishing line and think, that's it, I'm done. And so when I respond to those sorts of opportunities, I'm responding wholeheartedly with who I am in the circumstances. And I think to say, oh, this is a great opportunity, make sure you follow it, or I wouldn't talk to that person. I think, you know, you have to act, you have to be true to yourself and act in a natural, a way that comes naturally. And I don't think I'd want to kind of queer that by, or sort of spoil that, bias that by advice from the future. I'm happy just to go with it. And the same's true, you know, from now for the decisions that I'm making going forward. I'm happy to just make the best decision I can at the time and see what happens.
Brilliant. Well, that's the end of all my questions, David. It's been a pleasure talking to you. It's been inspiring and surprising as well. Some of the roots, certainly on the biochemistry and all those sort of things. And I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, I've enjoyed it very much, Nigel. Thanks very much. And I hope our listeners enjoy it too.
Yeah, I do hope so. And I'm sure they will. If people want to get in touch with you, want to check out some of the stuff, what's the best way to get in touch or check out what's going on?
The Risk Doctor website is the first place to come. It's risk-doctor.com. Nice and easy. Mm-hmm. There's a links page, which has got lots of other things on it. Every page has a link to my YouTube channel, and that's the other place where a lot of the good stuff is. So that is the channel name is Risk Doctor Video, all one word. So the Risk Doctor Video YouTube channel, or if you just Google David Hilson, I mean, you'll find me.
Mm-hmm. Or a tube station.
Yeah, or Euston Tube Station. Yeah. Actually, I'm going to be at Waterloo on Thursday at about 8 o'clock this week. So I'll be listening out on that platform just to see, you know, if I get that extra bit of affirmation.
The whole platform might shout at you. That would be
Yeah, who knows? That would be weird.
Brilliant. Thank you very much again. And I'll let you get on with your evening. Have a fantastic evening.
Thanks very much. I've enjoyed it too. Thanks, Nigel. Cheers.
Cheers, David.
Another great sponsor of the show comes in the form of Air Manual. Air Manual is a tool for documenting process, which and best practices. It's a company formed by one of my interviewees, Alexis Kingsbury. And I kind of summarised why my view of where we see documentation, a lot of my experience has been people will document something, a process, they'll put it in a Visio diagram that gets loaded onto a SharePoint site or something similar, and then a bunch of that. So then once that diagram's been shared with senior management, they're happy they have a process in the business. But then the detailed procedures underneath it might be with documents in just poorly kept and not linked easily and not updated. And what Air Manual does, it allows you to put in it's a tool for doing this kind of thing. You whack it in, the service in there, get in there, put in your process, your flow, and you build it down to as low a level of detail, even to the point of checklists where people can check off they've done it. So it creates that guided checklists, easy to create, easy to maintain, and all in one place. And no one's kind of rooting around to find the SharePoint, and then when you change to new SharePoint services and all that stuff, it's all there. So if you pop along to nigelcreaser.com/airmanual, there's a bit more detail there and a link there to click on to go and get. I think they offer a trial and things like that. So it's something that I think can easily reduce the amount of errors, rework, etc. within our organisation. So take a look. Well, I hope you enjoyed that, and come back next week when I have an interview with Martin Salama, who will help us get from warrior to warrior. Speak soon. Bye. So this is my final wrap-up every week you're going to hear this, you're going to get bored of it, but you can always click next podcast if so. If you have enjoyed it, if you listen to this podcast to the end of this show and you think that was great, I'd love to be able to help Nigel out. There are loads of ways you can do it. The first and obvious way is to share the podcast, send it out to people. If you know colleagues and friends who'd benefit from it, you think they'd enjoy it, just send them the link. Grab one of the links, or send them to www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. That's www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts, and that'll push them over to a Linktree link, and it's got all of the different ways they can consume the podcast. If you are feeling generous and have a big bag of cash, you could grab a copy of one of my books. Obviously, they're available in all the usual places, and print and digital. Again, jump on the website, www.nigelcreaser.com/shop, and that will give you a list of all the different ways that you can contribute and grab copies of the book. Also got links to all my guests' books on there as well, where I get a little bit of a kickback from them. If you are of a sporting mind, I have a number through doing some of my judo and running antics. I've managed to secure a few affiliate links and affiliates there as well. So in there, somewhere in the sponsors page, there's links to those as well. So clicking onto those and grabbing if you're looking to get super fit, then that would be fabulous as well. And I get a little kickback from those. I have a Patreon account. It's patreon.com/sundaylunchpm. So again, you can ping something in there, buy me a coffee or whatever. And finally, obviously the most important is coming back, listen again, because the more of you that come back, the more visibility I get, because there's more times that it's downloaded and all the SEO works and things like that. So yeah, that's it. So if you can help me out, I would be much appreciated. If you can't, don't worry about it. Thank you very much. Cheers now. Bye. My latest, the latest affiliate that I've got on the show now is Riverside. I use Riverside to do my interviews, Riverside FM. it kind of offers you a whole, if you like, micro studio management producer tool, and goes beyond that, has a really good free layer. And I've been using it for a while now. I find it really good. When I've had issues, even though I'm not on one of the higher paid levels, the support has been quick, responsive, and of high quality, and people keen to help me. The organization seems really good. The product seems really intuitive. Quality is really good as well. And it's a clever way of doing it is when you're recording through your browsers, so you've not got loads of desktop resources being used compared to some other products that I've used. And what they also do is they do they stream a lower quality version of it up onto as you're doing the interview, so you're not burning bandwidth while you're doing the interview and potentially impacting on the quality of the conversation. And then at the end, it uploads it, the higher quality from your browser. I mean, it's just a really good way of doing it. So if you are thinking of doing a podcast and you're supposed to do a podcast, I would recommend using this tool. I found it really good. Best of the tools that I've tried using to date. And you can get that at nigelcreaser.com/riverside, and that will redirect you to my kickback page on their site, and there I will get a little kickback from them. So take a look. Thanks. Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.